Hi, I'm Dan Webster, film critic for Spokane Public Radio and blogger for Spokesman.com.
And I'm Mary Pat Truthart, part-time film critic, part-time social justice volunteer.
And I'm Nathan Weinbender, also a film critic for Spokane Public Radio.
And welcome to Movies 101, that show that, as we like to say, seeks out worthwhile cinema wherever we can find it. This past week, our quest took us first to the theater, where we watched actor-slash-director Jesse Eisenberg and his feature, A Real Pain, co-starring the Emmy Award-winning actor Kieran Culkin. Then we'll switch styles, themes, and pretty much everything else cinematic as we tackle French director Jacques Audiard's blend of music and criminal activity titled Emilia Perez. Let's begin by joining up with a pair of cousins who are embarking on a group tour of their late grandmother's country of origin. That country is Poland, and the two cousins, David, played by writer-director Eisenberg, and Benji, played by Culkin, are using the money left by their recently passed grandmother, a Holocaust survivor, to visit the home where she was raised. David, the married and more responsible of the two, though easily rattled, inhibited, and always anxious, is paired with Benji, an outgoing character, irrepressible and extroverted to a fault, and consequently always challenging to be around. As the two bond with a mostly older tour group and their British guide, played by Will Sharp, the histories of both David and Benji, their past friendship, and the changes both have gone through are revealed. Eisenberg keeps things moving well enough, depending on his cast, Culkin, of course, but himself as well, to keep us both interested in what's happening and guessing about how it will all turn out.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, Eisenberg wrote and directed this movie, A Real Pain. It's his second feature as a writer-director. And I did happen to see his debut, which was called When You Finish Saving the World, which I really did like. I thought it was an annoying movie about annoying people with Julianne Moore and Finn Wolfhard. And I think this, his sophomore feature, is a huge step up. I loved this movie. This is going to be high up on my list of my favorite movies of 2024. And I just think even though it isn't a showy, maybe even stylish movie in the way that the next film we'll be talking about on the show, I think the filmmaking here just has such an ease to it. This movie just breezes by. It started and I was completely absorbed in it, and then it was over and I thought, wow, I just really spent some time with these people, even though it was only 90 minutes or so. And it's dealing with heavy material, but in a way that I find very nimble and very entertaining. And as soon as these two guys show up on screen, Benji and David, I knew exactly who they were after just spending a couple of minutes with them. And certainly the fact that Eisenberg cast himself and then cast Kieran Culkin as his co-star, there's definitely some dramatic shorthand happening there because we know the kinds of characters these actors tend to play. And they're certainly not deviating from what we've seen before, but in a way that I think works for the story. Benji, who is the Kieran Culkin character, he's the kind of guy that can befriend anybody, anywhere. He knows the story of the TSA agent that's helping them through the security line. He knows everything about her just from a quick interaction. His confidence is endearing one moment and then totally misplaced the next. And we come to see it both as a defense mechanism as he's working through grief and also as a display of really deep vulnerability. And watching the other people on this tour both kind of push him away, but warm to him at the same time, I found really fascinating, especially because Eisenberg does a very canny thing in keeping a lot of their interactions off screen. Maybe we can talk about that a little bit. Whereas David, who's the Eisenberg character, he's so closed off and so risk averse, and all of his insecurities are amplified when he's with his cousin, because they're both very tightly wound characters, but they're tightly wound in different ways.
Totally.
And all of their feelings and all of their inconsistencies and shortcomings are illustrated and come out in different ways. And I also appreciated the fact that A Real Pain and that title comes to have multiple meanings, which I also appreciated. Mm-hmm. Even though it is about these guys going on this trip and connecting with their heritage, connecting with their grandmother, connecting with roots, and also connecting with, you know, the remnants of these atrocities. It's not really a movie about emotional epiphanies. You're sort of waiting for this third act moment that so many other movies would have. And these two characters do have tough conversations, but it's not in the way that you expect. And I think you could even argue that neither of these guys really changes all that much over the course of 90 minutes. But the ways in which they deal with one another change. And in fact, maybe both, but certainly one of them is both literally and figuratively in the same place at the beginning of the film as he is at the end. And so, as I said, you know, A Real Pain, it's a short watch. But I think it has so much going on in it. And I think the richness of these performances is kind of disarming because, like I said, we know who these guys are at the beginning, but we don't know them at the same time. And so, yeah, I just think this is a really special movie. I liked it a whole lot.
Well, I liked much about this movie as well. And it's a tribute to Jesse Eisenberg's own ancestry, as I understand it. So A Real Pain reflects, I think, something that he's maybe wanted to make for a while. It is intriguing to me that this is coming on the heels of another film that was released earlier this year, Treasure, with Lena Dunham and Stephen Fry. Now, that movie is set in 1990, and they return to Poland because Stephen Fry is a Holocaust survivor. And so they go back together, you know, father and daughter road trip kind of movie. But unexpected things happen. Now, that movie is a lot more, I guess, solemn or dark in many respects. So the thing that I really appreciated about A Real Pain is, I mean, the sort of energy level like waxes and wanes. And just when you think you know where it's going to go, you might get it wrong. Also, we should mention a couple of the supporting performances, the secondary characters. One is this British tour guide played by Will Sharp. And you can just feel so much for him because he's left, as would always be the case, trying to herd cats among these people in this tour group. And then he has Kieran Culkin to deal with. But we see how Benji's energy affects the entire group, for better or for worse. Also, a nearly unrecognizable Jennifer Grey shows up.
Basically.
And I liked her character. Yeah. I mean, she seemed realistic to me. I'm not so sure. I thought that the couple who was, you know, exploring their roots was maybe a little bit too stereotyped. But then there was a fellow from Africa who had converted to Judaism. And so he adds something very different, mm-hmm. you know, to the mix.
Especially since he'd been a survivor of the Rwanda massacre.
Right, right. So genocide.
And he says that, and in typical Benji fashion, he goes, oh, snap. That's his
reaction. Yeah, right, like game over, you win.
He's constantly saying the wrong thing like that.
Right, yeah. And I guess my only problem, I think, you know, so not only do we have Treasure, this film from earlier this year, maybe all of these people went on this birthright trip and now they are more interested, you know, that is often a rite of passage for young Jewish kids in the U.S. And so maybe that's what's fueling this sort of ongoing interest. I would say that I actually spent 5 months in Lublin.
Which is where most of the movie takes
place.
Yeah.
At Maria Curie Słodowska University. And Lublin looks beautiful in this movie. And it was a really interesting sort of, you know, it has a medieval castle. And, you know, but when I was there, it was just coming out of,
winter.
You know, it's past in communist times mm-hmm. and it was like winter and so forth. But I thought that was handled. There's another aspect of this. The group is going to go to Majdanek, which is basically, it's referred to as a concentration camp, but for all practical purposes, it was a death extermination camp, which is right on the outskirts from the main city center.
A stone throw.
And that juxtaposition in real life, I can tell you, and in the movie is quite mm-hmm. stark and startling.
Yeah. You know, the one thing I wanted to say about the acting in A Real Pain is I saw a real difference and a lot more respect for Eisenberg, because the character he plays here, David, is a character that he's played more than once in several films, but it's not the character he played in A Social Network.
No.
In A Social Network, which is, I think, a movie that he got nominated for an Academy Award for, that is, he played a very troubled but much more confident and
conceited,
devious character than he plays here. And so while I thought this was much more the character that we've come to know him for, the kind of bumbling, almost a Woody Allen kind of character, he has quite a range.
And I think the key to the movie, A Real Pain, happens right after they go to the death camp. The tour group is having dinner in this
that is
in this
that
old
scene.
Inn, right?
Yeah.
And Benji is getting drunk and just being kind of loud and obnoxious and is burping, you know, in public. And he gets up to go to the bathroom, and the camera pushes in on Eisenberg's face as he delivers this monologue, and he just unloads all of these things about his cousin. Yeah. And the depths of that scene, what it means for both of those characters and what it means for
the entire group.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. Is, I think, the key to this movie. And it's when the movie makes a shift in just really imperceptible but really lovely ways.
Yeah, and there's no histrionic, melodramatic moments by any of the characters. They all act the way real people do.
That's absolutely right, and I think Eisenberg's dialogue is right on all the way through this movie.
Yeah.
And it's also really funny in places. I think we should mention that.
Yep. And that was our discussion of Jesse Eisenberg's A Real Pain. This is Movies 101, and it's time to take a short break. Before we go, remember that you can access podcasts of Movies 101 by going online at SpokanePublicRadio.org. While there, check out the individual reviews that Nathan and I write. Don't do it now, though, because we'll be right back to tackle French filmmaker Jacques Audiard's blend of music and crime titled Emilia Perez. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio. And we're back. This is Movies 101, and I'm your host, Dan Webster. During the first half of the show, Mary Pat Truthart, Nathan Weinbinder, and I discussed Jesse Eisenberg's film, A Real Pain. Let's now turn to, as the Monty Python troupe would say, something completely different. Namely, the latest by French filmmaker Jacques Audiard, described in some corners as a renegade auteur. His film is titled Emilia Perez. Set in Mexico, this mostly Spanish-language film would be just another saga of a murderous cartel leader having a change of heart, attempting to make up for the horrors he has caused, and ultimately facing the consequences of those dastardly deeds. But in the hands of Audiard, the talented director behind such powerful films as The Beat That My Heart Skipped, Rust and Bone, and A Prophet, Emilia Perez takes a radically left turn. For the gang leader here, Manitas, played by the trans actress Carla Sofia Gascon, despite a scary demeanor, identifies as a woman. And the frustrated lawyer Rita, played by Zoe Saldana, is hired to help Manitas become the film's title character, Emilia. Furthermore, all of this is played out as a musical, with each of the characters at times singing and dancing as if they had just stepped out of a Broadway performance of, say, Hamilton. Audiard, who both directed and co-wrote the film, splits the story between Emilia and Rita, each caught up in what becomes a study of feminist despair and ultimate empowerment. The actual crime plotline is less impressive than that message, but even more so than the two lead performances, Saldana, who shows a talent that she's kept under wraps until now, and Gascon, who provides her character and the film overall with a mighty heart that doesn't skip a single beat.
I believe I was tasked with discussing Emilia Perez because the Zoe Saldana character is a lawyer, or at least the film opens with her defending these apparently guilty guys in this murder trial, and she's successful in having them acquitted. But you can tell from her face and her sort of anxiety in the courtroom and outside the courtroom that Rita, played by Saldana, is not enthused about her career any longer. She just has this look of resignation on her face. So when she gets this intriguing, mysterious offer to do something different and become rich, she decides to at least explore the parameters. Little does she know that she's going to be dragged into this other world in these curious ways. So what happens going forward in this film has nothing to do with her being a lawyer, really, but more has to do with her being a fixer or a problem solver. Because, as Dan indicated, here we are dealing with this ultimate macho guy who has always wanted or felt like a woman and wants to transition formally into that role. He's married to we learn Selena Gomez of Only Murders in the Building fame, among other turns. So I was curious about this film from the beginning because I said to Dan, okay, we have a French director, we have two well-known identifiable American actresses, and it's a Spanish language film set largely in Mexico City, although I think it was filmed on sound stages, different places in Europe. So it's hard to talk about this film because it is so quirky in many respects that these characters sort of almost inexplicably burst into song. Then we have this character who is a trans woman played by the superior, I would say, Carla Sofia Gascon. Zoe Saldana does an amazing job to my way of thinking. Selena Gomez, playing way against type, managed to hold her own, but I think, you know, she has some other projects in the work that are going to be Spanish language films, and she didn't seem to be quite as comfortable as some of the other characters, but in the end, I think that she pulled it off. But this, I mean, it's hard to explain how these characters burst into song and dance. So this reminded me less of Hamilton, Dan, and maybe more of West Side Story or something in terms of how it was presented. But this film kept my interest all the way through. I'm not thrilled about Emilia Perez's conclusion. That didn't quite work for me. And I also was not convinced that the Selena Gomez character would be lusting after this older guy. That didn't really seem to fit either. But overall, different, I think, from his earlier films.
And different from most other films, yeah. I would say.
But I don't know. For some reason, I surprisingly like this a lot.
We should also say that this movie, Emilia Perez, won a Best Actress Award at the Cannes Film Festival, shared by its four leads. Adriana Paz, who plays a woman that Emilia falls in love with, was the fourth actor that was awarded there. And Jacques Audiard won a jury prize, which is usually given to a film that is audacious and outside the box in a way
and
that
I think
the
this,
jury particularly likes. And I would say
that description.
That fits that description. Yeah, my opinions on this are all over the place, not unlike the movie itself. There were moments, particularly the musical number near the beginning that's set at the plastic surgery facility, where my mouth was hanging open going, what are they doing? And then there were moments where I bet if you looked at my face, it was just, you know, confusion. But then there were moments that I thought were really striking and memorable. There's a musical number with a bunch of the family members of these people that have been disappeared that are joining this humanitarian cause that I thought was really beautifully shot and performed. But ultimately, you're right. It is kind of stupid, but it's admirably stupid. I sort of like that it commits to what it's doing,
exactly.
For better or for worse. The movie I was thinking of watching Emilia Perez was the Leos Carax film Annette, which I liked a lot more than you guys did with the wooden puppet and everyone was singing and it was the music of Sparks.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's a better movie than
probably,
this. And I didn't really think of Emilia Perez as a musical so much as like an opera because it has those big heightened emotions and it's not really concerned with logic. And you could imagine this maybe playing even better on a stage in that way than it does as a film.
Yeah.
The music, incidentally, is by Clément Dussol and Camille, who are a husband and wife composing team. None of the songs are really all that memorable, but I think some of the musical numbers are. So, this is a wild movie.
The scene that I remember most of all is the one in which there's an award ceremony.
Yeah.
And Zoe Saldana is going from table to table and dancing in a way that I went, I never knew she had this kind of talent.
And by the way, it's Saldana.
Yes, well,
Saldana. So let's be sure we get that right.
Saldana.
Movie, but nowhere else is it ever spelled with an ñ. But in the movie,
it is. She's changed her the spelling of that.
Okay.
And this is also where I learned that she spoke Spanish fluently. She's
Dominican
and Puerto Rican.
Yeah.
And I thought she did a really nice job. I even liked at the beginning of the movie, they're trying to make her seem like this harried, overworked lawyer. And so they give her these big fake dark circles under her eyes. And, which, again, it feels like a very stagey kind of thing to do. I think what is missing from Emilia Perez is I think you hit the nail on the head, Mary Pat, when you talked about the story not really connect. I don't think it has like a through line so much as it feels like a series of scenes.
If by any other director, if you took the musical scenes out of this, this is very reminiscent of a noir film of the late 40s, 54 minutes long, in which bing, 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 and that's how it ends.
It's also reminiscent of a lot of those kind of like post-Traffic, the movie Traffic, that is, you know, drug cartel stories that we were getting, something like Sicario even. You know, it's offering up these pretty radical ideas of duality and of gender and gender binaries and dynamics. And it gives us this character.
And change and connection and family. And
but it also gives us this character who begins as a ruthless murderer and who becomes basically a saint.
A philanthropist.
In a way that is, you know, she's trying to perhaps correct the misdeeds of her past, but also she still committed those misdeeds.
Right.
And the movie's kind of grappling with that, but I think it kind of sounds more provocative than it ultimately is. And I kind of wonder if Odiard's commitment to the musical form robs the movie of some of its...
some of its nuances.
Yeah, like the dramatic scenes, even though it's going for that big emotion, the themes ultimately don't really connect all the way, but it's trying to do a lot.
It's trying to do a very simple storyline.
Yeah, absolutely. But I agree with you. I think those two central performances, especially Gascon's, who's had a long career in like Mexican TV and things like that, I think they're really, really good. And I think kind of pull you in and make you actually believe that some of this is really happening. Even as you said, the characters are breaking out in song. It also kind of seems like the musical numbers might be fantasy sequences? I was never sure about that.
I was thinking about that in a couple of instances too, because, I mean, you know, it comes out of a realistic, for example, the one I was talking about, the award show, it is exactly like that. But then you see it could all be happening in her head.
Right.
Well, I thought there were a couple of really great scenes between Adriana Paz, who is a woman who comes to the organization that Amelia has founded in order to get information. And that goes in a very different direction than we expected. And so, you know, again, a shout out to her for her performance.
And again, this movie's on Netflix, so you can check it out.
Definitely. That was our discussion of the Netflix streamer Emilia Perez. And this is Movies 101. I'm Dan Webster. Earlier in the show, Nathan Weinbinder, Murray Pat Truthart, and I discussed Jesse Eisenberg's A Real Pain. Let's take this moment to thank Cassie Fox for both producing and engineering the show. We thank you to our loyal listeners. We invite you back next week, same time, same spot on the radio dial, when we'll again check out all the best that cinema has to offer wherever we can find it. Until then, when watching challenging cinema, consider these words from the 1950 film All About Eve, delivered by the great Betty Davis. Fasten your seatbelts. It's going to be a bumpy night. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
The Movies 101 podcast is made possible by the members of Spokane Public Radio. Become a member at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Thanks for listening to Movies 101.